I just found it. Here's the quote that he has. This is from the complete essays of Mark Twain. It was in Harper's Magazine. The Egyptian, the Babylonian, the Persian rose, filled the planet with sound and splendor, then faded to dream stuff, and passed away. The Greek and the Roman followed, made a vast noise, and they're gone. Other peoples have sprung up, held their torch high for a time, but have burned out, and they sit in twilight now, or have vanished. The Jews saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he has always been, exhibiting no decadence, no infirmities of age, no weakening of his parts, no slowing of his energies, no dulling of his alert and aggressive mind. All things are mortal but the Jew. All forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret of his immortality? Right. We read this some years at our Pesach Seder. There's a fascinating. Oh, I have a few other things here. There was Voltaire. Oh. He was a big anti-Semite. He suggested to the President of the United States that they should do to the Jews what they did to African Americans. That was his suggestion.
They should what?
They should treat Jews in America the same way they treat African Americans were treated as slavery. So John Adams, right, the second president, writes back, "How is it possible to present the Hebrews in such a contemptible light? They're the most glorious nation that's ever inhabited this earth. The Romans and their empire were but a bobble in comparison to the Jews. They've been given religion to 3/4 of the globe and have influenced the affairs of mankind more and more happily than any other nation, ancient or modern." These are fascinating quotes that he has in here. But okay, let's jump in, and as more people come, we'll do it. But tonight, I'm going to try to pack in what was given originally as 4 different lectures from Rav Wolfson about the 7 wonders of Jewish history. A lot of the sources are labbed on, and there's a book called Eye of a Needle by Rabbi Nehemiah Coopersmith. Hi, welcome. There's a stack of sources here. So I'll begin with just a few simple questions. You went shopping recently? Did you go to an Edomite supermarket? No? People are visiting games on Sundays. People drove up to the county. Have you seen like little Babylonian bungalow colonies? Right? Or when you went to college, right, did you go to a Midianite, you know, university? So where is Edom? Where is Bavel? Where is Midian? Where are all these ancient nations that you hear all about? And yet, as we start off with that quote from Mark Twain, they don't exist anymore. Right? People don't study these things. Maybe if you have to get like some degree in college, right? You'll read up about what the ancient Egyptian philosophy was or something like that. But anybody has a real moral decision to make in life, like I'm not sure what to do and I'm confused, I need guidance, let me open up an Egyptian philosophy book and try to use it as a guide. The Torah we have is what guides us. But all these nations, they rose, you know, the whole cycle of history, you know, they usually become very powerful, they usually become corrupt. Then they fall and another government comes over and takes over them. I mean, if you think about world history, so you had Babel, right? There's no Babylonian bungalow colonies nowadays, but they were the nation. We sat on the floor and we cried because they destroyed the base of Migdash. After Babel, they were taken over by who? What nation rose up after Babylonian? Remember this? Persian, right. After the Persians? Between them. Persians and the Greeks. Then the Romans and the Germanic tribes came and took down the Holy Roman Empire, right? So history is full of that. And as a good quote to start with from Mark Twain, that they're not around anymore. You know, I mean, nobody takes them seriously anymore. And even if there's people who are living in these countries, like for example, there are civilizations who have been around for a long time, the Chinese, right, in India, right, in North India, but they're not the same belief systems as their ancestors. They live in there, and they were, we'll talk a little later on about how they're basically isolated, and they were huge in population, so, you know, more or less, they carry on, they don't have the traditions. If you take a Jewish person living now versus living thousands of years ago, so the same laws of Nezikin, of damages, depend whether the guy was plowing his field every day or whether he's a computer programmer. Right? The same halachas that govern his daily life, the same Torah means from a lesson of horah, of instruction. So the same Torah that guided our ancestors 3,000 years ago is what guides us today. So the Jews have been around, but not all Jews have been around. It's a little of a harif statement, but only it's the Torah Jewry that's really survived. All the other like offshoots that Sadukim, and there are some Karaites actually still. I think there's like 1,000 Karaites worldwide. Compared to like 15 million Jews, there's like, out of that percentage, there's like, I think 1,000 they estimate, because they're in hiding, don't really talk about it so openly. But you have something like, but any Jews who became Hellenized during the Greek time period, back in the times of Tanakh when they were worshipping Baal and Asherah and all these Avodah Zarahs. So we don't have anything from them anymore. The only Jews who have really survived through all these things, the wonders of Jewish history, are the Torah true Jews. Anyone who's tried to assimilate, well, we'll talk more about anti-Semitism and stuff like that, it's not around. Ki heim chayenu, that this is our chiyus, our life comes through the Torah, and we have a promise. The Torah tells us, ki lo tishkach mipizaro, right? The Torah is not going to be forgotten. There's an interesting quote I saw in one of the things where Rabbi Yaakov Emden, so find it quickly, he writes in the introduction to his siddur, No, it's not where I thought it was. But he basically said, oh, wait, I just saw it. From the other page. Here it is. Rabbi Yaakov, who was called a Navi by the Chasam Sofer. How can the heretic in God's providence not be ashamed? Simply analyze our situation in this world. We're an exiled people. The scattered sheep, despite all that's happened to us over thousands of years, we are still here. I swear that when I marvel at this wonder, it's much greater to me than all the miracles Hashem performed for our ancestors in Egypt, in the desert, and in Eretz Yisrael. Right? So if Rabbi Yaakov Emden was astonished by the fact there's a Jew in the 18th century, could you imagine what he would say about, like, you know, 2023? A bigger miracle than you see us in Eretz Yisrael. So let's talk about seven different miracles of them. Again, I want to tell you everything. It's huge. We could pick one, just talk about it for the whole time, but we'll try to give an overview, but there's much more discussion to have on this. The first wonder is that we are eternal. Because we start off by saying that all these nations have gone. To make a prediction, on Shabbos morning, I left my house at 8:30. It was not raining. By 8:35, it was pouring. I was drenched. And then I came to shul, like, well, I was dripping, and I had my glasses, and I took off my hat so it wouldn't get ruined. And guys are like saying, but the forecast said it wasn't supposed to start raining until later on. That's like the best job in the world to have. You can be dead wrong, and you still have a job on Monday morning. When you make a prediction and it doesn't come true, hey, I predicted what the weather's going to be like. I didn't predict this, I missed something. But the Torah's making predictions about things that are going to happen, not 5 years from now. No, not even now. The world is changing so fast with technology and politics and radicalization. We can't predict what's going to happen five years from now, 50 years from now. But the Torah is going to predict an event that's going to be true thousands of years later. Half of a fella. How could you deny that? So there are many of them. The first source I'll show you is it's a medrash. In Bamidbar Rabbah, if you look in the first source, Hine ze oimed achar kaslenu, achar koiso maravi shel beis hamikdash. The medrash tells us that the koiso hamaravi will always stand. Now, to write something years ago and have that true, how would they know that? How would they know the Kosel Maravi would always be there? And not only now, you can see now people go there daily. My daughter, and my son-in-law, they're leaving, they're on a flight now, coming back to America. But the last picture, they went to the Kosel, right? If you could tell somebody, you'd be able to, forget about WhatsApp and phones, and you'd be able to take a picture of you, of Jews, standing in front of the Kosel. I'm like, what? Zachor, we were sitting on the floor crying for the base of Migdash. But the Medrash says that it'll always be standing there. Lama, shenish b'lo HaKodesh Baruch Hu, she'ein achor of l'olam. Hashem, a shavu means an oath, a promise that'll never be destroyed. So when you make a prediction like that, and it's on the books, again, this has only been written down, but it was an oral tradition for much, much longer before that. When you call like, when you predict like that, that's a proof. That's a proof of this. When the Torah makes these types of predictions, there's so many more. Let's go to the next source. Is from the Navi Yirmiyahu. This is one of the most famous prokem in the Sefer, where he talks about the Shavu Vanim, the Gevulam, that the Jewish people are going to return back to Eretz Yisrael. So he says, Im Yamushu Achukim Ha'ele. So if these chukim, these laws, so in context, it's talking about the fact that the moon and that the stars are going to shine and that the ocean and the waves, if these laws which I put into the world would ever stop, Nu'um Hashem, Gamzer Yisrael Yishpesu, Meyos Goy Lifanai Kol Hayamim. Then the Jewish people not. So Kol's man that there's going to be a universe, that there's going to be sun and stars and moons and constellations in the natural order, there's going to be a Jewish people. That's what the Navi is telling us. So the fact that we're around, when all these other great nations, we talked about the Edomites and the Babylonians and the Midianites and the Chivim and the Yevushim and the Girgashi and all these like powerhouses, right? Where is Ashur? Where is Sennacherib? Where are these great empires? You take a trip into Manhattan to go to the Museum of Ancient History, and you'll see like Look at our, here's our Tanakh, here's our Chumash, here's a Siddur, Tefillin, and a Sefer Torah. It's the same Sefer Torah. Again, the dress might be different, but the halachas are still the same. That the fact that we're an eternal nation, so that's the first of seven. Let's go on to number two. The fact that the Torah, again, forecasts that we're going to be dispersed. It never said we're going to be in Eretz Yisrael forever. We're actually darshan two parts of the pasuk. The first half, it says, "Ve'hefitz Hashem eschem ba'amim," that Hashem is going to scatter us amongst the nation. So for the last 2,000 years, we've just definitely been spread all over the world, right? Jews, we have very different languages, Ladino, right? Yiddish, but we speak all sorts of different languages. We have very dissimilar histories. If you could imagine with the Jews living in Taman, the Yemenite community, is very different than the Jews were living in Eastern Europe, which is different than the Jews in North Africa, or in Spain. Everyone had different, but Hashem says this, I'm going to scatter you all around. And that's true. We've seen that, Baruch Hashem, we're seeing Jews coming back to Eretz Yisrael, and we'll talk about that also, but it's we'll call it prophesized. It's told in the Torah that this is something that's going to happen, and we've seen this wonder happen, that it's happened. The third one is the anti-Semitism. Right, so people hate the Jews from both sides. Right, they hate the Jews because the Jews are all communists, and they hate the Jews because they're all capitalists. Right, if you would ask like an extreme person, an extremist, let's say like the left wing, right? Who do the left wing extremists hate? They hate white men and Jews, and och and voy if you're a white Jewish male. Oof. Who do the extreme right hate? Minorities. And the Jews, right? It doesn't make sense. But nevertheless, the anti-Semitism is there. And again, the Torah tells us it's going to happen. If you look in source number four, Pasuk in Devarim, V'goyim ha'heim, lo sargia, you're not going to have any, if you're ragua, you know what ragua means in modern Hebrew? To be calm. Ragua means to be calm. You're not going to be calm. V'lo yeh manoach, you don't have any rest, any menucha, l'chaf raglecha, from your feet. You're not going to be there. Expulsions, blood libels, forced conversions, pogroms. The Torah tells us that this is what it's going to be like. It's not going to be, you know, Jewish exile is going to be sitting on some tropical island with a little pina colada and under a nice, beautiful. It's miserable. But the Torah tells us that's going to happen. There's going to be anti-Semitism. If you look, I'll show you another pasuk in Tehillim. Omru, the goyim say, next page. L'chu benach chideim migoy. We're going to wipe them out. Oh, they're never going to mention the Jews. Judenrein. They're going to make the world empty of all Jews. But here we are. Even though it says they're going to try to do this, the Torah says that we're going to be there. This is something, I don't know if any of you were here on Tisha B'Av, but this is a book, Rabbi Daniel Gladstein. So I read a passage from it. When you here for Tisha B'Av? Okay, so I don't feel like I'm repeating myself. This is something fascinating. He's quoting, he says, Hashem rescued my grandfather from the gas chamber, and in doing so, he rescued my father, myself, and my children. Hashem saved us all. The Ribbono Shel wanted us. He must have wanted us, and if you are reading this, then Hashem rescued you too. Hashem has been looking out for you for a very long time. People say that if they witness a miracle, then they'd really boost their belief. They'd really fortify their emunah. If I only would have seen the splitting of the Red Sea. You want to see a miracle? Look around your shul. Around your community, look at the faces of Jews around you. A Jew living in 2023 is the greatest miracle you'll ever see. I'm going to the Five Towns now. I'm going to Muncie. I'm going to Brooklyn. I'm going to Lakewood. I'm going up to, fill in the blank, Teaneck. The fact that there are Jewish communities, it's not just yawn another thing. It's a miracle. The fact when you walk, when you're in, go to Borough Park and you see that when it's dismissal time and all the kids with the long bays are running onto the bus, it's a miracle that there's a busload of Jewish children going to yeshiva. And he says, you more than this. Over 3,300 years ago, our grandparents were in Mitzrayim, where 80% of our nation perished. Yet, Hashem preserved our ancestors, so we'd be here today. From the time of the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash, the death toll was enormous, but the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted you. He wanted me. He wanted us to be here today. Hashem made sure that we made it through the Churban Bayis Rishon. The number of people died in the Churban Bayis Sheni was similarly staggering. Josephus writes, the number of people who perished or died by the sword was 1.1 million. Then the Romans hunted down every single Jew they could find. But the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted you. So he saved your ancestors. Thousands of Jews were massacred during the Crusades, but Hashem wanted you. In 1391, 200,000 Jews were forcibly converted in Spain, but Hashem invested in you. 300,000 Jews were expelled from Spain in 1492, and tens of thousands were killed. Hashem saved you from Chmielnytskyi pogroms. You could be here today. He's been looking out for you for 3,300 years. Your immediate ancestor was rescued from the horrors of the Holocaust. For a Jew to be here today is not statistically unlikely. It's not a high improbability. It's downright impossible. It's an open miracle of the highest proportions. Beautiful. But that's what it is. These are the miracles. So that's a quick summary. The Torah is right here. The Torah had these supernatural predictions that we're going to be eternal, despite the fact we're going to be scattered, despite the fact that we're going to be hated, and against all these odds, Hashem has saved us and kept us alive. So that's the first part of it. The second part is the influence we've had. So miracle number four is how small we've been, but yet how influential we have. Right? Let's start at the beginning. I was in, I forgot where. My wife has been on bed rest after her surgery. So you know what happens when you're on bed rest for too long? Facebook Marketplace. She's been sending me all over New Jersey to buy random items because it's a good deal. So she found some lady who was retiring. She had a daycare center and she's retiring with these little toys and books. It's $3 a toy. So we drove down to, I don't even know where, somewhere. I'm learning all about the beautiful state of New Jersey. But anyway, so we're there, and we told the kids we slept in 45 minutes to go get these. I said, get Slurpees afterwards. Okay, so we go to 7-Eleven to get the Slurpees after the successful Facebook Marketplace purchase. And the man behind the counter says to me, "Shalom." So I just smile. He says, I'm saying peace to you. Yes, yes, peace to you too. He says, "We're brothers." I did not want to engage in this man. I said, "We're brothers?" He goes, "Isaac and Ishmael are brothers. You are Isaac, I am Ishmael. We're both good people. We fight over Palestine, but we're both good people." So I said, we're like cousins. We have the same grandfather. He says, "No, not cousins. We are brothers." Okay, fine. My wife said, she's like, "Why didn't you get into it with him?" I said, "I just wanted to Slurpee and leave. I didn't want to have a whole, theological debate with the man at 7-Eleven. But let's talk about being brothers for a second. Of those two brothers, of Yitzhak and Yishmael, how many come from Yishmael nowadays? How many Arabs would you say there are? A lot.
Way more than us.
Way more than us. So in the Arab population, if I'm not mistaken, my research showed that it was between 300 to 400 million Arabs. 15 million from Yitzchak, 300 to 400 million from the brothers. We're brothers. My friend tells me in 7-Eleven, we're brothers. Okay. Ich zal yachaliot. How could it be that from the two families, one all of a sudden becomes 300, 400, and we're 15? Don't make no sense. The Torah tells us that's what's going to be. Looking, that we're going to be the smallest nation is a pasuk in source number 6. We recently read this in Devarim. Right, so we focus first on the first half. Right? Hashem's going to scatter us. Only a small number you're going to be left among the nations where Hashem is going to drive you out. So that's another miracle. Again, if you just look at the statistics, the way things have unfolded, right? I mean, all the miracles, we could just talk about, again, there's so much to unpack over here, but the miracles that Hashem told a man living in the Middle East, that the world is going to call themselves by your name. So of the 7, almost 8 billion people in the world, 4 billion people consider themselves to be the spiritual descendants of Avraham Avinu. Jews, Christians, and Muslims all go back to Avraham. So the fact that Hashem called that and predicted it, only the Torah, only a divine document could have done such a thing. Here's what I find is fascinating. Again, I have a lot to do. But number 5 is the fact that we are the Or L'Goyim, which actually that pasuk is here, if you look sort of for a second, in source 10. I'm skipping a little bit. But Zaticha L'Or Goyim, I'm going to make you a light to the nations, Lios Yeshuasi, my salvation, Ad Kitzei Ha'aretz. That the Rambam writes that the Jewish doctrines have spread throughout, so the world will be familiar with the concept of Mashiach. That they're going to know the Christians and Islam, they'll be familiar with the concept as Mashiach coming. But if you think about this, something amazing. Okay, you don't have this all on the sheets, but I'm going to read to you about some of the contributions that the Jews have made, what the Jewish mind has done to medicine, economics, science, trade, right? One of the first Jews to win the Nobel Prize was in 1918, Fritz Haber, right? He came from a Hasidic family. He created something to make an artificial fertilizer, and through this he sustained one-third of the Earth's population. He saved over 2 billion lives through his claim. Jonas Salk gave the first polio vaccine. Saved the first oral vaccine for polio. Selman Waksman, like antibiotics. Gabriel Lippmann, color photography. Borch Blumen, the origin spread of infectious diseases. Edelman discovered a chemical structure of antibodies. Britton Epstein, the first cancer virus. Riemann, the structure of the atomic nuclei. Julius Mays, the law of thermodynamics. Freud, the father of psychotherapy. Einstein, transformed physics. Benjamin Disraeli, the prime minister of Great Britain. Isaac Singer, the sewing machine. Levi Strauss, who makes the jeans. Pulitzer Prize, right? All these things. The Pulitzer Prize is fascinating. Let's forget that for a second. Let's talk about Nobel Prizes. How many Jews there are and how many percentage of Jews, like, it's not like your uncle, like I'm going to brag about the family for them. Let me tell you where you come from. But if you think about percentage-wise, how many Jews have won Nobel Prizes between 1901 and 2012? Around 150 laureates have won Nobel Prizes. And out of the 150, 185. 850 total, so 185 of them, right? In some years, you have five Jews alone. 22% of all individual recipients of the Nobel Prize are Jews. 36 of all U.S. recipients of the prize were Jews. And Jews make up approximately 0.2% of the world's population and 2% of the U.S. population. It's unbelievable, right? So I'll put it in perspective. The global Islamic population is 1.2 billion. 20% of the global population, and they've received since 1901 how many Nobel Prizes? If you can count on one hand, four, and one of them was Yasser Arafat, Yimach Shemo. Right? You got the Nobel. Remember that in the 90s, you got the prize. So the global Jewish population is 16 million, 0.02%, and they've received 185. Versus 20% who's received four. That's the conversation you want to have with somebody in 7-Eleven when we say we're brothers, right? Okay. I have a nice quote from here, and then we're going to move on to a few more. We can hardly get up in the morning across the street without being Jewish. Thomas Gale, a nice Irish Gentile, he writes a book on the gifts of the Jews. The religion of the Hebrews, a tiny marginal desert tribe, changed the worldview of Western civilization. The West's most deeply held beliefs about life, human nature, God, and justice are all owed to the ancient Israelites. Quote, they've developed a whole new way of experiencing reality. It may be said with some justice that theirs is the only new idea that human beings have ever had. It's from an Irish. If I said that, I'm like, I'm insane, I'm a racist, I don't understand, I'm prejudiced. But this, I'm quoting from outside sources, right? We started with Mark Twain. I have a whole book of these. I mean, we could just go on and on. It's like with Leo Tolstoy. The Jew is a symbol of eternity. The nation which neither slaughter nor torture could exterminate, which neither fire nor sword of civilizations were able to erase from the face of the earth. The nation which first proclaimed the word of the Lord, the nation which preserved the prophecy. Such a nation cannot vanish. He's the embodiment of eternity. It's written in 1891. I mean, it's unbelievable. So that would be our light to the nation. So again, there's this one pasuk, one phrase that occurs in three different pesukim. If you have its sources, don't read all of it. Don't try to get through everything. If you look in Devarim, Melachim Aleph, and Divrei Hayamim, so it's the same idea. V'ha'isi l'shama l'moshe l'shnina b'chol ha'amim asher necha Hashem shama. You're going to be the consternation, okay, a proverb, I'm just reading from the translations here, that everyone's going to be saying, it's the same idea, everyone's going to be talking about a mashal shnina b'chol ha'amim, same in Malachim, same in Divrei Hayamim, that we're going to be scattered everywhere. And yet, despite everything we're talking about, the persecutions, and the promise of that Hashem has given us the ability to be, influence all of the societies that we found ourselves in beyond proportion. It's not logical. It's just what the Jews have contributed to every single civilization that we found ourselves in. It's half of a fella. There's no way to do it. So in summary, the Torah predicted a tiny nation would be the light into nations. And again, it's true. So that's the end of part two. Now let's go to part three, Eretz Yisrael. And this is from the Innocents Abroad, right? Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, 1867. I put a few things on here, but I'll read one thing. This is from chapter... It's very interesting on these diagrams here and the pictures. There's a lot in there. I'm just going to be sorry you don't have on your source sheets, but I'll read you just a short intro to how he talks about Yerushalayim. So Mark Twain writes, "A fast walker could go outside the walls of Jerusalem and walk entirely around the city in an hour." Is that true nowadays? Could you walk around Yerushalayim in an hour?
On the ramparts.
Right, that's a fun tour. That's the ramparts? You did that? The ramparts tour? It's very geschmack. "I don't know how else to make one understand how small it is. The appearance of the city is peculiar. It's as knobby with countless little domes as a prison door with bolt heads. Every house has from one to half a dozen these little white plastered domes of stone, broad and low, sitting in the center of, or in a cluster upon the flat roof. Whereas one looks down from an eminence upon the compact mass of houses, he sees the knobbiest town in the world except Constantinople." Okay, I'll read a little more of that. But now look, we're on the next page where I have on your source sheets, where it talks about the homes there. He writes, "The houses are generally two stories high, but strongly of masonry." Okay, I'm going to skip a little bit. Look at the last part. "It seems to me that all the races and colors and tongues of the earth must be represented among the 14,000 souls that dwell in Jerusalem. Rags, wretchedness, poverty, and dirt. These signs and symbols will indicate the presence of Muslim rule more surely than the crescent flag itself abound. Lepers, cripples, the blind, the idiotic, assail you from every hand. And they know but one word of but one language, apparently the eternal bakshish." Do you know what bakshish is? I didn't know I had to look it up. Tipping, it's when bribery, right? That everyone speaks that language. "To see the numbers of maimed, malformed, and diseased humanity that throng the holy places and obstruct the gates, one might suppose that the ancient days had come again. Jerusalem is mournful and dreary and lifeless. I would not desire to live here." Could you imagine if you would have bought real estate in Jerusalem in 1867? This is not the Jerusalem of Mark Twain. This is a Jerusalem. This is Eretz Yisrael in the hands of non-Jews. As Mark Twain writes, other places a faithful wife who's waiting for her husband to finally return home. Eretz Yisrael refused to give her payros to any of the inhabitants. When Klal Yisrael came back, when Am Yisrael came back to Eretz Yisrael, we turned the desert into lush valleys. These pioneers, the Chalutzim, what they did by draining the swamps with the mosquitoes, the mysterious nefesh that they did. But it happened. No one would describe Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, right? There's a beautiful video I saw, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, the Alt Noi, the old new city, whereas the number of startup companies, businesses in Eretz Yisrael, and just a few blocks away, you're standing by the Kosel. The fact that you have this balance of the cutting-edge technology and yet thousands of years of our tradition coming together and synthesizing, this is the Eretz Yisrael. The Eretz Yisrael is so connected to the Klal Yisrael. I'll give you, again, this is a book I want to show you now. It's called Sacred Soil, written by Rabbi Moshe. It's not written by him, but it's based upon his drushas. And he talks about the love, the bond that Eretz Yisrael, the Jewish people have towards Eretz Yisrael. He calls it the marriage of Klal Yisrael. And everything's attracted to its source of origin. I don't know if we discussed it in these Emunah classes, but I remember talking about this previously. It was a Yom HaAtzmaut, I forgot exactly, but the idea is that there are certain physical laws in the world, but they have a spiritual source. For example, gravity. If I pick an apple and let go, it's going to fall to the ground. Okay, it's not a chiddush, we all know that. But why? Why is there a law of gravity? So the Maharal, Rav Kook, and other great thinkers have pointed out, because where did that apple come from? Came from a seed in the ground. And everything naturally wants to return back to its source. So gravity is really based upon a spiritual concept. The reason why gravity exists is because everything has a draw and attraction to its source. That's why Am Yisrael is drawn to Eretz Yisrael, because that's our source. We came from Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that Adam HaRishon, his body came to offer the dirt, the Cain that made Adam HaRishon, Vatem Kurim Adam, we're from Adam. So that's why we are bound to it. And we have, like he calls it like a marriage. That's interesting. Now, because it's a marriage, when the Jewish people are kicked out of Eretz Yisrael, that's a divorce. And every single agadita, every single non-legal stories is found in a certain mesech that has a connection to that. So the opening Mishnah in Gittin, the laws of divorce, is Hamevi Getni Medina Sayam. Somebody who brings a bill of divorce from overseas, comes from outside of Eretz Yisrael. Being outside of the Eretz Yisrael is the aspect, that level of a divorce. And when we talk about the Gemara's, again, there's certain sections you're not allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av. There's certain sections of Gemara you can learn. One of the famous Gemaras that's learned in almost every single shul is the story of Kamtza Bar Kamtza, the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, the Churban destruction, the destruction stories. All those pages of Gemara are found in Gittin. So the Masechta that teaches the laws of a separation between a husband and wife is the same section of Torah where you learn the Am Yisrael outside of Eretz Yisrael, because we're married to Eretz Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is married to Eretz Yisrael. That's our attraction to it. So I'm going to read you one thing. King Shlomo taught all imperfection is obscured by love. It's a pasuk. That's what he's quoting in English. All imperfections is covered by love. When there's love between two people, they're simply blinded to each other's faults to the benefit of the relationship. A Jew should see no fault in Eretz Yisrael because he should be filled with love for Eretz Yisrael. The Meraglim, which was Tisha B'Av, who went to spy the land in advance of the initial conquest, reported negatively about Eretz Yisrael. Their natural inclination to Eretz Yisrael was blocked by insulation. The love they should have had to the source of origin was obstructed, and therefore they were able to perceive the land negatively. But this is the sixth point over here about the love that we have for Eretz Yisrael and the connection, the bond that Am Yisrael has, and we see it. Now, let's not falsify anything. What we're visiting, what Am Yisrael is back and is coming back in Eretz Yisrael, that's not what the complete Geula. Right, it's the Torah. The government is certainly not being run by Torah values in Eretz Yisrael right now. Not everyone in Eretz Yisrael is keeping, but there's a certain fulfillment to the fact that Am Yisrael has come back. I forgot. I was a madrich years ago in Mivaseret, and we spent the Shabbos in the Gush. I forgot who was speaking, but he was so excited. He says, I go to Ben Gurion Airport, and I see two planes landing one after the other. One is a group of Olim coming from Ethiopia, and one is a group of immigrants coming from Russia. And I see Jews from literally all four corners of the world coming together, coming back to Eretz Yisrael. It's amazing. It's an amazing. Now, again, on a side topic, not for now, but whether that's a fulfillment of the Nevuah or not, that's where the debate kicks in. But the last point is, the seventh wonder is the Teshuvah. If you look in the last source on the sheet, the Devarim, Perek Lamed, V'haye kivyo elecha kol ha-devarim ha'ela, all these things are going to come to you, ha-brocha v'ha-klal ha-shenesati lefanecha, the blessing and the curse that I put in front of you, v'ha-shivos ha-levavecha b'chol ha-goyim asher hidachecha ha-shem elekecha shomo. You're going to come back. You're going to come back from all the goyim that I've scattered you, v'shavta ad ha-shem elekecha. You're going to return. You're going to do teshuva. Shemata b'kol, you listen to his voice. Kichol asher anochi mitzavcha hayom, like I've commanded you. Ata you v'necho v'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecho. There has never been a tsunami of a Baal Tshuva movement. That the Jews who for maybe generations had nothing to do with it, and all of a sudden people are coming back and restoring it. In the 1960s, when the hippies were coming. And everyone was bashing them and saying, "Oh, they're a bunch of freaks and a bunch of drug addicts." And the Baal Treva says, "No, this is an amazing thing, because people are finally starting to challenging the status quo. They're starting to really question about things that were so clear to previous generations." He says, "With that, he says the ice is beginning to melt." And we saw that people have come out of this, and that the fact that people are doing tshuva, this is amazing. this is predicted. Again, every single one of these things has been predicted in the Torah, but the fact that we see this coming true in our own eyes, the fact that, you know, I remember Rabbi Dr. Stein was once speaking to the faculty, and he said, you know, when he was a kid, he said it was common to see the following scene in a pizza shop. The parents, the grandparents would there be in the kosher shop, and like the kids were running around without yarmulkes. The teenagers just like, well, I'm going to eat kosher, but I'm not. He says, now I go to a pizza shop and I see the opposite. I see the grandkids are wearing yarmulkes and the parents and the grandparents are not. That's the tshuva movement that's been happening. Just want to conclude with the beautiful summary of all that we kind of talked about. The beginning of the second period of the Beis Hamikdash, Alexander the Great conquered Asia and Europe. After his death, the general split up the empire. Ptolemy I took Eretz Yisrael. His successor, Ptolemy II, was a man of culture who built schools and libraries. As part of his effort, he, quote, invited 70 sages to Alexandria to translate the Torah into Greek. You know what that's called? You hear this? The Greek translation of the Torah? Septuagint. So the Gemara tells us that they put 70 rabbis, and they each gave 70 different rooms, and they realized that if we translate it literally, then we're going to get into trouble. For example, the first three words of the Torah, Bereshis Bara Elohim. If you translate that, literally means Bereshis in the beginning, this thing called Bereshis, Bara created Elohim. So Bereshis, something created Hashem. We translate in English, in the beginning God created, but if you do it literally, then it sounds like there's this entity called Bereshis who created God. So all 70 rabbis on their own figured out too, and they made several changes like this without consulting each other. So I think Rav Huttner once remarked, it would have been a bigger miracle if you could have gotten 70 rabbis in the same room to agree to make the changes. but they did that. So what happens as a result of that translation of Septuagint, that means for over 2,300 years, non-Jews have had access to what the Torah says. Right? Okay. So, this is how they know that these seven impossible predictions were made by the Torah before they happened. The Torah says these things are going to happen. We're looking at Baruch Hashem. We're at the end. We're holding the Iksid de Mashiach. We're like, you know, just polishing the buttons right now. We're getting ready for Mashiach to come very, very soon. So we see these things. But if you could make, again, we talked about, we start off with the weatherman who's totally wrong in the predictions. If you made these types of predictions, which don't seem to be logical, wouldn't seem to make sense so many thousands of years ago, and they've come true. So it can't. Again, we can go through each one of them and how we were scattered, how they're going to hate us, how we're going to be the eternal nation, how we're going to come back to Eretz Yisrael, how we're going to do Teshuvah. All these things have happened. These are seven open miracles. So what's the takeaway? The return of Jews to Hashem has been predicted in the Torah. Even non-Jews cannot deny that all seven wonders of Jewish history were predicted in advance by the Torah. So I think that really, you know, as part of our Emunah Chabura series, when we see these, each one of these, and again, I kind of tried to keep things moving to not run out of time, but each one of these you could just sit and think about for 5-10 minutes and realize it's an open miracle. Any one of these seven that we discussed, now, you could just sit and think about it and you see, wow. Now again, I gave the quick version of it. There's a book that elaborates upon this. I think originally Rav Wolfson gave 4 shiurim going through all seven, you know. We don't have 4 hours tonight. We have 45 minutes. But something to think about. Please take the source sheets, look at them, discuss with them. Talk about it at the Shabbos table. And we'll see. If a person wants to look, we can see openly the hands that... I think, the quote I wrote in. I couldn't find it, but I wrote it in on the top. It's on the top. It's a good way to close. King Louis XIV. That's Pascal, a 17th century Roman Catholic philosopher. What proof is there that there's a God? So he said, "Why, Your Majesty, the Jews." There it is. Wonderful. Okay, shkoyach, everybody. Are there any questions?